The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Seven minutes after 12 midday. Faster my good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on till one. Get in touch via text 166177. You can also WhatsApp 07624166177. Email studio at maxradio.com. Call 66 1368. Minister Allenson is with us today. Dr. Alex Allenson, one of the two Ramsey MHK, and Minister at the Department of Enterprise is with us. And well, apart from Business Isle of Man, Digital Isle of Man, Finance Isle of Man, Locate Isle of Man, and Visit Isle of Man, he's waiting for TT. How do you feel about TT? What is it now? A week, next weekend, the weekend after next,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, well, lovely to see you again, Andy. Good afternoon to you and your listeners. Hopefully we can get a couple of callers coming in. I'm really, really excited. The only thing I can't be excited about is the weather we've got today. But I mean, we deserve a break, don't we? Can we just have 2 weeks of decent weather? Whoever's got a bit of sway in that, if we can have 2 weeks of decent weather, we can have a fantastic return of motorsport to our island and the best motorcycle race in the world.
Are we ready for it?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's been difficult. I know people are nervous. I know people are anxious about it coming back. Some people haven't ever experienced the TT, and I think you've been broadcasting the number of police and fire officers who've never dealt with this. But we have an amazing group of volunteers here on the island, the marshals, the medics, all the backup support, and we've got the racers involved. We've got the top road racers in the world absolutely gagging to race on our roads again.
Okay, what part, I mean, obviously motorsport is with, what part of the department is motorsport within?
I mean, it's part of the DFEL umbrella. As you say, we do an awful lot. And what we do is promote the TT and the Manx Grand Prix as well. What that means is all the behind-the-scenes work that goes into making it as safe as possible to try to get government working together, which we do very effectively during TT, so the roads are done, the hospitals are ready, the emergency services are ready, but also the spectacle is ready, not just for the people on the island, but the visitors we hope to attract.
Lots of messages in so far. One from Peter who just said, given the problems the Isle of Man has in securing hospitality staff, and some people have said there's a shortage, any hotels indicate that they're not ready?
Not the hotels per se. There is an issue with staffing, and that's across the board, and it's not just us, it's across the world, because what COVID did was get everyone in their homes. Some people found better jobs, other people haven't come to the Isle of Man that normally come here, particularly during the tourist season. What I would say is that our hotels, I think, are going for business and are up and running. I think there may be some problems with the hospitality sector, some restaurants, some pubs haven't got enough bar staff. If you have got some spare time over the TT and want to make some extra money, there are jobs available. If you are a student listening in across who are coming back for the TT or coming back for the summer, there are jobs available on the island for you. And actually being part of the tourist economy used to be a bit of a baptism of fire for most young people. They'd work on the beaches, they'd work with the donkeys and with the deck chairs. Now the equivalent is serving coffees or serving pints. But the jobs are there, so if people have got some spare time, please take part, please support our local economy.
Okay, well, anybody need it? Do you need a work permit for 2 weeks to come?
We're talking about returning okay. Students. We're talking about residents. If you're coming from across, yes, you would need a work permit, but we're trying to fast track that. We've done a lot of work with visas as well for people outside the UK, trying to get them over. But we're looking to fast track that as much as possible and working with the hospitality sector to see if we can plug this gap as quickly as we can.
Okay, another question in just said, what's the total cost of staffing the new state-of-the-art mobile medical facility at the grandstand for TT? Did it require Treasury approval?
In terms of staffing it, there's no extra cost, because what we've done is to provide a facility. Yes, we did have a chat with Treasury about that. We're providing a temporary facility. Well, they used to have to work out of a bit of a tired centre. They've now got, basically, it's a much more expanded porta cabin with three clinical rooms there with examination couches, so the riders or the staff who really need a bit of time out, a bit of care and attention, can get it there in a safe environment. But in terms of staffing, it's the same staff going in. We've just improved the facilities that are on offer to them.
Okay, this is the one. This is Ronnie, who just says, obviously you're Ramsay MHK. Shame about Ramsay Bakery. Has the department had chats with anybody about replacing Ramsay Bakery?
Yes, there's a lot of work that's gone on, both in terms of the Department for Enterprise, but particularly the Department for Food and Agriculture, reaching out to both the people who were running the Ramsay Bakery and trying to understand what made them close. And I appreciate that. It's a family business. They've gone through some difficult times recently. Also reaching out to the other bakeries that we have on our island, and obviously to the flour mill as well, to see if we can get a resolution for this. And there are various initiatives that we're exploring at the moment to see how we can go forward. But in the meantime, there is bread on the shelf.
Can you say, I mean, any more? Obviously, there are lots of jobs gone from Ramsay Bakery.
There are quite a few jobs gone. I think they employed in total about 80 people. Some of those were on night shifts and various shift patterns and not working full time. What Treasury and DfE have been doing is trying to reach out to them in terms of other employment. And as we just said, there are lots of jobs available on the island at the moment. We've got record low unemployment and record high vacancies. So I'm hopeful that we can reskill those people if necessary, but get them replacement jobs.
This is Renee, who's dropped a note in just to say, Dr. Allenson is a Ramsay MHK, yes, along with Mr. Hooper. What's the latest on the Ramsay Marina, and where do you stand on it?
We'll go back to the election. In terms of the Ramsay Marina, I'm fairly vanilla on this, to be honest with you. I will encourage any investment that we can get into Ramsay to create wealth for the local people and jobs. I've said that all the way along, and I'm quite happy to consider various proposals. The issue with the marina from the local population is that they didn't want to lose the beach. And also, there were really quite concerns that the marina was being used to create a lot of real estate and would damage the environment. Now, what infuriates me is that we're 5 years we've been talking about marina. I want to see where the money is. I want to see some firm proposals coming forward. But both Laurie Hooper and myself have been talking to the DOI, who gave the initial expressions of interest, to say, let's sort this out once and for all. From the developer's point of view, are they going to go ahead or not? From the local population's point of view, do they have to be concerned or not? Because anything that happens in the Ramsay Marina has to go through a full planning process, and actually giving the lease to give that land over to somebody to develop would have to go to Tynwald, would be a democratic decision. In terms of my own opinion, I would like a marina for Ramsay. Would that have to include huge amounts of property in a hotel? No. Would that have to be in the bay? No. We've gone through this for many decades in terms of a marina for Ramsay. I think it would help the town, but I know that there is an awful lot of opposition to the proposals that are on the table and have been on the table for a couple of years. I would just like a decision made on that, and we are working with the DOI, and I've also been in contact with the people behind the bid to say, let's be honest with the local population. Is this going to happen or not? If it isn't going to happen, let's put it to one side and get on with some more important things about the regeneration of Ramsay.
Do you think they've got the money? Have the marina people got the money?
I've seen no evidence of any significant backing for this development.
Okay, let's go to Roger, who's with us now. Hi, Roger. You're live with Dr. Allenson.
Hi, Andy, and hello, Dr. Allenson. This is a very quick one, which I hope you can use your influence within the Council of Ministers to publish regularly, as it used to be, the summary of the proceedings of the Council of Ministers, of the minutes of the Ministers' Council. So can you, on your next meeting, mention that? Because it hasn't been published since September 2021, and it's a very useful document for public.
Okay, Roger, I think I will double check when I get back to the office, but I think we have published some stuff since then, because certainly when the new administration came in, we had these discussions. Because as you say, what used to be published was just a very short précis, and yeah, we wanted to publish as much as possible of what went on in council. So I absolutely agree with you that in terms of an open, transparent government, you need to know what the council ministers are talking about, what's on their agenda, and what are their concerns. And we'll try to get more rather than less.
Excellent. It's just that I have checked the website this morning before I ran,
yep,
and it's the last one is September 2021.
Well, I apologise for that. I'll look into that.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Roger. A note in from Charles in Port Erin, who just says, could you ask Dr. Allinson what, if any, progress has been made to appoint an AME, an aviation medical examiner, for the Isle of Man? Since the sad passing of Dr. Pilling in 2017, we haven't had a local AME, meaning all island-based pilots, air traffic control staff, must go off-island to a UK doctor, taking that staff member out of work when they travel across, compounding staffing issues here on the island. As the island wants to see itself as a centre of excellence for aviation, is it time to address it?
Absolutely. And, you know, Adrian Pilling did an amazing job for many, many years, and his passing was extremely sad. It's not about appointing a medical officer. They just set themselves up. It's not a government role or anything like that. And that's one of the issues. I did look into it last year, and actually the Department of Health and Social Care were quite happy to fund the training of somebody new. But that often means a doctor, particularly a GP, going across for months on end, having to train for this specialty. With Adrian, obviously he'd been in the RAF previously, and so he was already trained. And it is difficult to get these people across. Now, in terms of the Department for Enterprise, we're working at the moment with people involved in general aviation to see what we can do to encourage that more at Ronald's Way. And yes, there have been problems with ground handling and also with the traffic control recently. But I've met with somebody who's restarting the flying school there, for instance, and talked to her about her ambitions for getting this back up and running, because I think it is an intrinsic part of our island, that connectivity, but also that ability to get flying lessons and things like that. One of the things that I addressed with her was the lack of aviation medicals, and she's been doing some work with people across to either take people across the UK or bring somebody from the UK here, and hopefully through that dialogue and getting expressions of interest, we can get a long-term solution.
Okay, Charles, thanks for that. Stephen is with us. Stephen, it's not Stephen, we're on, this is Dave. You're live with Dr. Allinson, Dave.
Yeah, good afternoon, Dr. Allinson. I noted earlier when you started the programme that you said we were nearly ready for TT. Now, I would beg to differ, Dr. Allinson. I put it to you that our public transport network is creaking and falling apart. This weekend, we had 80 bus services cancelled. We had 47 services cancelled on Sunday alone. And we are about to welcome a large influx of people to the island. So I'm asking you, what's going on?
Okay. Thanks very much, Dave. And funnily enough, one of the reasons I was late, Andy, was I bumped into Tim Crookhall on the way here, and he was going down to try to address this problem. I think in terms of what's going on, there has been an issue with drivers for the buses, and I think that's a combination of sickness in particularly, but also the ongoing staffing of the buses. He is addressing that. I know that the transport wing of DOI are addressing that to make sure that we have the buses available during TT, particularly for those people who fly over and need to be met by the bus at the airport. And that's certainly something we were talking about last week in the department, and we will be working with DOI to try to get that up and running as much as possible. But I also have to appeal to taxi drivers. We've been getting comments that the number of taxis meeting some of the flights is a little bit less than it should be. This is our busy time of the year. This is, you know, if you've got a taxi plate and you can get out there and earn some extra money, this is the time to do it, because public transport is really important for those people who fly over and don't have their own motorbike or car, and we need to lay that on as much as possible. So certainly we've got the trams and things like that, but certainly the buses and taxis are really important.
When can we get a straight answer regarding public transport that they're going to be up to full strength for that important fortnight?
Well, as I said, I know that the minister's working with all the relevant parties to see if they can get that up and running as quickly as possible. They've got a full timetable. The question is having enough staff to meet that timetable. But I'm confident that, you know, Tim Crookhall's doing as much as he can to make that happen.
Dave?
Yeah, I'd just like to say a few further pieces on this, because I don't think you're really painting the full picture, Dr. Allinson. I'm going to put it to you that I've got a lot of colleagues that are bus drivers, and come April, the majority of their duties were extended in their driving hours, and they were extended from up to a maximum of a 12-hour shift, including meal break. Now, the reason that the buses are being cancelled, which the public don't know, is that drivers simply are exhausted, and they are taking their rest days. Obviously, the industry heavily relied on overtime working to provide a service. Now, yourself as a doctor, you'll understand about driver fatigue and everything else. And the right thing for a driver to do is, if he feels tired, is he doesn't make himself available. Now, I would put it to you, this problem didn't exist before April, before they changed the duties. So surely the common sense thing to do would be to reduce the hours on the duties that are available to the drivers. Some of them may be inclined to work overtime, but also on a lot of your new drivers that are starting, the job is becoming unbearable. To actually spend 50 hours in a week behind a wheel, it's too much for them. They're just leaving.
Okay, well, I mean, Dave, I really take on board your perspective on this, and I'll certainly feed that into the Minister for DOI. And as I said, he's going down there today to see what we can do to try to put this right and make sure we have a sufficient bus timetable, both for residents and visitors.
Okay, Dave, before you go, this is Andy, by the way. I mean, I've heard rumours. I've heard two lots of rumours. One that you say in that drivers have had their hours increased, but I've also heard that drivers have had their hours cut.
I've not heard any drivers being cut. What does concern me, though, Andy, is when we look at the industry in the UK, and the UK has a massive problem in recruiting drivers in public transport, and they've addressed this problem in many operators. And one of the biggest drawbacks for attracting new staff was the length of the shifts. Yeah, and legally, they can drive up to 11 hours, but not everybody wants to, you know, it's a long day.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I mean, Andy, I'd love coming on your show, but again, it's dealing with facts, not rumours. And I thank Dave for pointing out those facts, you know, in terms of the length of the hours of work. I mean, I think those were probably brought in because there was a shortage of drivers that we've seen across in terms of HGV drivers and skilled drivers. And I know that they have been recruiting those, but in a short term, they may be asking people to do extra shifts to try to fill those gaps.
Okay, last word, Dave.
No, obviously we'll see what happens in Turnbull tomorrow, because I know this has been brought up by a lot of MHKs, so absolutely. Hopefully this will get thrashed out.
Okay, all right, we appreciate that. Stephen's with us now on Man in Line. Hi, Stephen, you're live with Dr. Allinson.
Good afternoon, Andy, and good afternoon, Dr. Allinson, and good afternoon, listeners. If you could indulge me, because I want to set the scene first for you to reply, if you will. And I would like to talk about the current tribunal, which was discussed yesterday on Manx Radio, and the ongoing factors and facts relating to it. And if we could just go back on Dr. Anson's arrival, this is documented. She summarised some of the challenges on the island in our medical care is a disillusioned, fragmented medical workforce. Reports of bullying were rife, a lack of medical management, a medical leadership structure that was unworkable, resulting in a sense that those in leadership positions were absolved from any sense of responsibility or accountability, a culture of not reporting concerns, and a culture of not investigating concerns. Now, they seem to be within the structure, the management structure that she identified, but what gives me great concern is yesterday Anne Corlett admitted on the radio that they were aware of this but appeared to be powerless to do anything. Now, I think that is it's not only an indictment of failures of management, it's a failure of our political system to do with it. It's no good Anne Corlett and others who were in the department at the time wringing their hands and saying we were unable to do anything. They were there as the representatives of the public to ensure that we get the right answers and things were done. Now, this is likely to cost us millions of pounds in resolution to these faults and problems. But what I wanted to go on to say is this going to be a cover-up? And I hope you will not be a party to any cover-up. Is this our Watergate situation? And I know that you spoke to Dr. Ranson. You approached her to ask what was going on and about the whistleblowing information. What can we do? Will the Chief Minister tomorrow merely circle the wagons and try and get everybody to just blow it over? Or can we have confidence in what you will do, the Chief Minister will do, and all those involved in a political sense? Because the only ability for the public, we can't talk to civil servants. The only people that we can talk to is our elected officials to do the right thing and make sure that we've got a health service that deals with us when we are ill. So I'd like you to discuss and react to some of these points that I've made, please.
Yes, Stephen, first of all, thank you very much for bringing this up and also doing it in such a considered way. I can't disagree with anything you say. You've read out some of the findings of the tribunal and some of the perceptions of the tribunal. What I would like to reassure listeners is we have some fantastic clinical staff on this island, doctors, nurses, lab technicians, the orderlies, who do an amazing job here. But there in the past there has been seen to be a culture where people haven't been listened to, and that needs to change. And I think that is changing and has changed. The point you make about political members on departments, I think, is absolutely true. We are elected by our constituents to do a job to represent them. We are then offered a place in a department to continue that public scrutiny and to make sure that those services are delivered to the public. And so I was disheartened to hear from Anne Corlett that she knew what the problems were and felt powerless to deal with them. This was a time of COVID. That isn't an excuse, but obviously communication became difficult and people were separated. But you are absolutely right that it is the role of political members of departments to challenge, to actually make sure that things happen and make sure that things happen for the good for the population of the Isle of Man. Now, coming on to the statement tomorrow by the Chief Minister, I haven't read his statement, but I've talked to him, and actually many of the members of the Council of Ministers have talked to him since the tribunal decision was made public, and he takes this extremely seriously. This has to be a line in the sand. We have to move on from this, both to accept what happened, and obviously there's an independent inquiry into the whole issue of what happened during the COVID pandemic, but also moving on, we have to make sure that we have the right attitudes and the right environment for everyone who works on the Isle of Man to do their job properly.
Stephen?
Well, what I'd like to say is that it would appear not only has the civil servants been involved in a cover-up, I hope the politicians weren't involved in a cover-up, but if they feel, if an MHK in a department feels, they would themselves become a whistleblower. Who will they blow the whistle to? Would it be the Chief Minister? Should they have the confidence within the system to not be considered not a team player within a department, but representing the public, should they have the confidence to be able to go initially to their minister, and if nothing happens there, then they should be able to have the confidence to go to the Chief Minister and say, look, we have got a big problem in this department. These are the facts as been presented to me, and I want you and hope that you will help me to do something about it. Because that, to me, is the simple thing. We had a whistleblower in Dr. Ranson who raised these problems, but we have no whistleblower in a parliamentary sense to say there is big problems in this department, and it must, Dr. Allenson, manifest itself in a way that we, the public, are not getting treated properly. We know the length and breadth of the island. There is people who you bump into have all got their problems and stories about how they've been treated, the waiting lists, etc., etc. And this should not be a time for circling the wagons. It should be a time for rooting out the big issues and problems. And I hope you would agree with that.
Yeah, Stephen, this is not a time for circling the wagons. That's why I'm quite happy to discuss this with you. That's why the tribunal report has been made public. That's why the Chief Minister's making a statement tomorrow in Tynwald on this radio channel so people can listen to it, and why he will but then be asked questions on his statement by all the representatives put there by the people of the Isle of Man. I think you're absolutely right that political members of departments should have the confidence to go to their minister. If they're not happy with what's going on, if they're not happy with the minister's response, should go to the chief minister and say they're not happy with what's going on. But at the end of the day, if they're not happy and they're not being listened to, you know, politicians can resign from their roles and go public in Tynwald. And that's what has happened in the past and will happen in the future.
Okay.
I don't think it happens enough, to be honest, and possibly that's the fault of those we elect.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you for your replies.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that, Stephen. Just with Dr. Allinson on Man in Line today, I think what's come out of this, Dr. Allinson, is that the general public didn't know that medical professionals fell out so much, that there could be differences of opinion. Yeah. We probably thought everybody was pulling on the same rope.
I particularly during the start of COVID, back in March, April, May 2020, there were lots of different opinions. It wasn't one person being right, one person being wrong. We didn't understand what was going to be happening. There were all the different predictions coming out of the UK with the number of deaths. Even the World Health Organization, I think even today, say that you shouldn't close your borders, that it's not effective. There were lots of conflicting bits of opinion and advice. And at the same time, I can remember I was getting emails from physicians, from doctors who were watching what was happening in northern Italy, saying this will be nobles in 3 weeks' time. You've got to do something. So there was incredible amounts of pressure. We now know far more about how COVID spreads. We now have vaccinations. We now have treatments. But at the time, there was a lot of fear. Let's be honest, there was fear and anxiety. And what we had to do in terms of the Council of Ministers was try to balance that with a clear policy and then adapt that policy on a regular basis. There is no one opinion in terms of medicine, law, any profession you go into. But what I hope and what we must do is listen to all those opinions.
Just regarding COVID, because obviously we're endemic now, on balance, how do you think the Isle of Man government handled the COVID pandemic?
I think we handled it well. And your listeners will say, he would do, wouldn't he? He was in the Council of Ministers. I think we handled it well. I think that there were things we could have done better. There were things we should have done faster in hindsight. And some mistakes were made. And again, that's why the Chief Minister is absolutely committed to an independent inquiry, building on a lot of work that's already been done by the Tynwald committees looking into this, so that we can look at this in an open, transparent way without necessarily appropriating blame, but to make sure that if we do have another pandemic, we have the right techniques, the right processes to deal with it.
Will we have another pandemic? Is there a COVID-23, 24 on the way?
When you look at the history of pandemics, they will happen from time to time. The question is how severe they are, what our inbuilt immunity is to them, and how quickly they spread. You have to say that when we had the original batch from Wuhan, it didn't transmit as quickly as we thought, and it was slightly easier to deal with by lockdowns, by isolation. My worry, and I think we handled that very well, my worry looking at other countries such as China and North Korea at the moment is they're dealing with Omicron, and we know how quickly that can spread. And I think their experience with that will be very different to our experience with the original strain in 2020.
Bearing in mind that we have an impressive health service, and let's not get away from that.
Absolutely.
That by and large, it's a very impressive health service. Just to use a medical metaphor, regarding the whole Ranson case, can we lance the boil? Can we make sure that we focus on treating people rather than arguing?
we can try. We can try our best. But when you look through the tribunal, you had some very powerful professionals, two of them qualified doctors, in a very intense, pressurised time, trying to deal with something that was new. all our preparation, wrongly, you can say, was all about a flu pandemic, the next Spanish flu. We weren't looking at coronavirus. We weren't looking at very much an airborne-based virus. And even then, the Public Health England and the WHO refused to admit that it was airborne-based, and we had to wash our hands all the time. When obviously, later on, it became quite apparent that actually mask wearing and ventilation was the best way of dealing with this. So I think you will always get those difference of opinions, but it's the way they're handled and the way they're respected, I think, that we will learn and we will improve.
Dr. Alex Allenson is with us on Man in Line today, Minister for Enterprise, talking about the TT. Anything else you want to do, get in touch, text, email or call.
Now is definitely the season to visit Ramsey Garden Centre, where there's something new and unique arriving in store every week. Right now, find a huge array of colourful summer bedding and basket plants, plus pots and ceramics for indoor and outdoor plants, lovely gift ideas, solar lights and fabulous garden decor. Visit us on Facebook to see what's new at Ramsey Garden Centre. For expert information, call 816 506 or take a trip to Ramsey Garden Centre, open 7 days a week on Albert Road.
When you need a monument for your loved ones, contact T.E. Cubbon, a trusted family-run business for over 150 years. T.E. Cubbon provide new memorial stones, grave renovations, new inscriptions and fire hearths. For quality workmanship and a professional personal service tailored to your wishes, visit us at Hope Street, Castletown, or at Broadway, Douglas. Call 844-440. T.E. Cubbon, here when you need us.
Just take a look at the menu at Port St. Mary Golf Pavilion. Lunch is served 7 days a week, and there's so much choice, whether you fancy a sandwich, a hearty meal, or coffee and homemade cake. Port St. Mary Golf Pavilion is a hidden gem tucked away down at Callow Point, where every visitor will receive a warm welcome, superb quality and great value. For menus and opening times, visit their Facebook or click psmpavilion.im. Time for food. Time to visit Port St. Mary Golf Pavilion.
Has the House of Keys got nothing better to do than to consider whether it should say prayers? Is this symptomatic of a parliamentary and government system which creates work to keep idle hands busy? Is the system broken? Oh yes, and what about climate change? Is it still an emergency? And if it is, how can government give a licence to Kroger to search for gas? Daphne Kane, MHK, provides some very considered responses to these questions and much more on Agenda tonight at 6 p.m. on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gorn. I'm not sure was it the full moon, but the questions seem quite feisty today. Well worth a listen.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
It's 21 minutes before one. Juan, you're live with the Enterprise Minister, Dr. Allenson.
Hey, good afternoon, Andy. Good afternoon, Alex.
Hello there. Good afternoon.
I have two questions for you in an overview. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's a treaty about to go through the UK government at the moment, which is, in future pandemics, going to give control of lockdowns, vaccinations, etc., to the World Health Organization and take that authority away from national governments. My question is, looking at the way the World Health Organization is dealing with certain things and Shanghai, etc., the question to you is, from a doctor's point of view and from Combs' point of view, where would the Isle of Man be standing if this treaty goes through, which again is another thing which is not being made public? You're not going to see this on the mainstream media. So again, it's another thing that's being kept quiet. Where does the Isle of Man stand on this? My second question to you is, what is your views and principles on the way the World Health Organization is being run, and also your views on the World Economic Forum?
Right, I'm just writing those down. Economic Forum. Okay. First of all, in terms of a treaty, I haven't heard of that. I doubt whether the UK would give up their sovereignty for something as important as health, and particularly public health in terms of a medical crisis, to the WHO. But I'll take your word for it that there's been rumours about that. I mean, certainly from an Isle of Man perspective, we would not give up sovereignty to an external organisation. In terms of the WHO itself, as I've said to Stephen, I have real problems with some of the way they handled the pandemic right from the start. They were saying things like quite insistent that COVID-19 was not spread by air, that it was an aerosol spread, full stop, and that it was fomite spread, and that was the way to deal with it. And we're very much against countries closing their borders, and delayed the actual statements that we were dealing with a worldwide pandemic, I thought, far too late, when it was quite obvious, seeing things that were happening in China and also in Europe, that that's exactly what we were dealing with. And there was that reticence from them to take this seriously and push the button.
Health Organization? Who runs it?
As I recall, it's an offshoot from the United Nations. Again, your listeners probably know far more about it than me, because it's one of these things that's always been around, and you wonder why. They've got representatives from different countries. I don't know how democratic it is, though, and I think that their handling of this came into question, which is why lots of different countries did lots of different things. Was perhaps lack of a worldwide leadership, and the fact that all of us were struggling with dealing with this in our own way because of their reticence of declaring the pandemic. In terms of the World Economic Forum, this is not a democratic institution. It is a forum. The Davos meetings that were set up were basically set up as a talking shop to try to get that interaction between elected governments and non-elected members of either the business sector, private sector and voluntary sector, and also charities in the third sector. I think that the way it's been handled has come into question, and the value of it has come into question. It is a forum, but there are lots of other different forums where people can have an open voice in a more democratic and open way.
Are you a supporter of the World Economic Forum and its views, considering that it's now trying to defend its actions rather than hide them in so much as its World Global Leaders Program? I'm just trying to ascertain where the government stands and the individuals in government stand on the policies, because there's going to be a lot of turmoil coming up in the world soon, and it's getting clearer month by month as it goes along where this is heading. And my concern is the Isle of Man will do the best for its people and its sovereignty and not take on these world initiatives, which a lot of them don't have any place here in the Isle of Man. We've seen how unique we could be by closing the island down during COVID and having our own lifestyle here and freedom while we're on the island. And my concerns is that the people within government and civil servants' agendas at a certain level in government are going to interfere with that.
Yeah, I would agree with you in some ways, Joan. I mean, when you get these big forums and you get hundreds of different views, often the results of that are seen to be watered down. And we saw that with COP26 in terms of climate change, in terms of the use of coal. And so the passion, the ambition gets diluted. I think in terms of the Isle of Man, we don't have to sign up to all of these. If it seems like it will suit the Isle of Man, we can take on board, but also we can do it an awful lot better. And I think that's certainly the ambition of this administration and something we should do. We don't have to do the same as everyone else. We shouldn't do the same as everyone else. We should do what suits our people and our island. And certainly I know that Alf Cannon, the Chief Minister, feels exactly the same way.
Okay, all right, Joan, thanks for calling today. I've got to crack on, because here's Rosemary. You're live with Dr. Allinson, Rosemary.
Hello. I'd like to ask you about the complaints department in Nobles. I made a complaint after an operation in 2019. I wasn't happy with the reply, so it went to the independent investigator. Because of COVID, it obviously took a lot longer than it should have done, but the result was sent to me on the 3rd of June last year, upholding all my complaints, and I was told that I would hear from Nobles within 3 months. We're nearly a year on, and after a complaint to our Ramsay's other MHK, I received a letter to say it was still being looked into. 7 months later, I'm still waiting.
Well, Rosemary, all I can do is apologise for that. I mean, normally our complaints procedure, it's quite strict in terms of when you get the reply and how that can then be dealt with. And obviously, if you're not happy with the reply to the complaint, where you can go for or almost the second opinion. I mean, you've obviously been in contact with Laurie Hooper, who, as you say, is the other Ramsey MHK, but also the Minister for the Department of Health and Social Care. So hopefully he'll take that up and make sure you get the answer that you need as soon as possible.
Okay, Rosemary, it's Andy. Do you feel you're being fobbed off?
I'm just being ignored, to be quite honest, because it was I'd waited 5 months before I contacted Mr. Hooper, and now we're nearly 12 months. And one letter from the hospital saying they're still looking into it. What is there to look into? Because all my complaints were upheld. You know, I don't want other people to go through what I went through, and until those complaints, procedures are put in place to prevent those things happening again, nothing's going to change.
Yeah, I mean, all I can do is apologise, Rosemary, because I'm not familiar with your case, and really we shouldn't be broadcasting it on air either. But if you can send me the details of your complaint, I'm more than happy to take that up with Laurie and also with the department.
Okay, all right, Rosemary, thank you. Just keep us informed, Rosemary. Here's a message from Roger who just said, can you please give a date for when medical cannabis prescriptions will be fulfilled on the Isle of Man?
Thank you very much, Roger. I know that, again, Laurie Hooper is spearheading this. The expressions of interest went out. They did have a good response with several pharmacies that were willing to provide this service. And from what I know, he and the department are looking into that and should be making an announcement very soon.
Okay, well, live with Dr. Allinson till 1 today on Man in Line.
Typhoon House, happily working to keep you working, whether from home or the office. We can supply you with ink and toner for your printers and copiers. All major brand cartridges are held in stock, along with our outstanding range of 100% guaranteed compatible cartridges at discounted prices. And ask us about new printers and copiers. Call 661-331 or email typhoon@typhoonhouse.im. Typhoon House.
Mom, Dad, there's no hot water again.
Having trouble with hot water and heating? Energy prices are rocketing, and there's never been a more important time to make sure your heating system is in tip-top condition. Home Warm by Energy Management Systems is the simple way to spread the cost for essential maintenance, starting from just $7.99 per month. For peace of mind and money-saving advice, call EMS on 613-210 or find us on Facebook. Home Warm by EMS. Become our priority.
You want how much? 1% commission? That's £2,000 to sell my house. That's it. I'm seeing red.
Sick of huge commission fees? Don't get mad. See red. With CG Red, the new service from Cowley Groves, you can sell any house up to £350,000 for a fixed £750 fee. That's a saving of up to £2,750 on what you'd pay with a traditional estate agent.
So go on, see red. Visit cgred.im. They're giving other estate agents a darn good thrashing!
So, what are you doing Friday morning from 9:30? If the answer is not much, come down to the Shore Shop on Strand Street and join in with Mark Tiley in the morning, that's me, because we are going to bring the Friday Flutter to the store, and we've got TT Racers in there as well, plus all the latest info on all the new products available at Shaw Telecom in Strand Street. I'll see you there, 9:30, the Shaw Shop, Strand Street, Douglas, this Friday.
The Morning Show, brought to you by Shaw, with a variety of plans to choose from to suit all budgets. The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
10 to 1 on Manx Radio. By the way, Mark's out on Friday. Thursday, Man in Line's going to be live from Ramsey Pier. Queen's Pier will be live finding out how the renovation's going. So we'll be talking to Graham Kerfey, David Furvival, and also from the Commissioners, Jeff Court. Steve Bevan's going to be there. From the Chamber of Commerce, Karen Jones and Sally Huxham. And Marley Masker, the MLC, of course, architect enormously into architectural heritage. So, and maybe you'll be there as well. I think we've got some special ice cream made by the the gelaterie there as well. Alex, you're training marshals, is that right? When is that?
We've been training marshals really since last year. So at the moment, we've got over 1,000 marshals registered for sessions across the 2 weeks. But for those people who might find difficulties getting with the online course or want a little bit of help, there'll be a drop-in session running on Sunday, the 22nd of May. That's this Sunday coming, from 10 till 3 at the grandstand. You don't need to book. All experience levels are welcome. It's a little bit surprising because about a quarter of the registered marshals are from the Isle of Man, about 60% from the UK, and then the rest from right around the world. Wouldn't it be great to have more people from the Isle of Man, particularly young people, involved in what is one of the best and most prestigious motorsports events in the world?
How much do you have to know?
Not a lot. You just have to be ambitious, you have to be keen, and you have to learn. It's all about safety. This is the main thing with the marshals, that we rely upon the marshals and the medics to make sure we can run safe racing for some of the best riders in the world. This is about safety, and the TT Marshals Association will teach that. They'll guide you through the process, and you will get the best seats in the house for what is one of the best events in the world.
Okay, 10 till 3 this Sunday at the grandstand. And it's funny, one of the most famous people in pop music used to be a TT Marshal years ago, and he loved it. That was the late Maurice Gibb.
Right. Didn't he live that?
Yeah, he was a TT Marshal, loved being a TT Marshal. Here's a message in now. This is Alison dropped a note in just to say, you've talked about 500,000 visitors and the target. Is it a target or is it a wish?
It's a target, Alison. Tomorrow I've got to stand up and actually present the visitor economy strategy for the next 10 years. Now, back in 2019, we had about 320,000 visitors. We want to grow that to 500,000. We want to do that by extending the season, by having more things happening during the autumn and the winter, by using some of the great facilities we have on the Isle of Man, the real natural beauty, to get more visitors over here. Because we know that will drive investment in the hospitality sector, and that will give things for the visitors, but also the people who live here. Nicer restaurants, nicer pubs. They're nice already, but we can do even better. And so that extra investment by having more people coming here will provide services to all of us. So it is a target, and I'll be explaining tomorrow in Tynwald how we're going to reach that target.
Okay. And how do you feel? I mean, we've talked about Dingy Douglas and the fact that things are a little crumbling around the edges in some places. Yep. Not everywhere, but some places. I mean, how do you feel about that when talking of a target of 500,000?
I think we can always do better. One of the things that lots of visitors will give us, though, is a sense of perspective. I sometimes think that we don't realise what we've got. And we do have problems. We do have issues. We have railings that need to be painted and walls that need to be rebuilt. But we also have some fantastic things on our island. And I think we can actually make sure that those visitors experience those. Yes, as previous listeners have said, we need to get the buses right. We need to get everything back on track. But I'm really looking forward to a fantastic TT festival this year, and then building on that a good summer, and then building on that a good Manx Grand Prix, so we can make sure that everyone knows that the Isle of Man's open for business again.
Talking of the Grand Prix, how come it's been cut down in size?
What we've done with the Grand Prix in association with the Manx Motorcycle Club is look at some of the issues in terms of marshalling, in terms of accommodation, in terms of travel for that. And so what was almost a 10-day event with the classic TT at the end has been shortened, so that we can absolutely guarantee that we've got enough marshals, enough staff to deal with the racing. If you remember in the past, Manx Radio has been great doing appeals in the morning for more marshals for racing later on that day. We need to get away from that. We need to have that resilience and make sure that all of these festivals are sustainable. I know some people think that government want to get rid of road racing on this island. I'm committed to it. A lot of us are committed to it. That's what is part of the heritage of the TT, and that's what we want to continue.
How does the department get on with the ACU?
Very well. We use them in terms of organising the racing, dealing with some of the insurance aspects of the racing, which people don't think about because it's all behind the scenes. But we have very constructive relationships with all the people involved with the TT Motorsports.
Another message in, this is Texter 945, and just said, just regarding that 500,000 visitors, so that's an extra 180,000, is that right? Was it, did you say 320?
It's 180,000 spread out over 12 months.
Right.
And again, that's using some of the existing facilities, upgrading them, but also looking at how we can provide more facilities for visitors to come over. And there are lots of options, but they will need investment, they'll need a bit of ambition, and they'll need a little bit of entrepreneurship, I think.
The Texter says that we're going to need another 2,000 hospitality personnel, but we already have low unemployment, yep, a rented private and public sector crisis, so nowhere for these hospitality people to afford to live in. Does that add up to good policy?
It does add up to good long-term policy. Again, this is a 10-year plan, and I think your listener's absolutely right that we need to deal with issues about housing on the island as it is. We know that other jurisdictions have had problems with things like Airbnb and all the available properties being rented out to tourists, and so people who live there can't afford or even can't get a place to live there. We need to get it right for our island, which is why the Communities and Housing Committee has been sent up to look at this, which is why the visitor strategy will coalesce with that to make sure that we provide those facilities for visitors, but not at the expense of our residents.
Dr. Allinson's been with us for the past hour on Man in Line. Well, TT is, a week on Saturday.
We are ready to go.
And ready to go. Well, I'm just going to ask you, when TT finishes, what do you hope will have happened?
I hope that everyone would have had a good time. I hope that we would have seen some fantastic racing. But utmost, I hope we can do it in a safer way possible with a bit of good weather.
Okay, and just another plug for the marshals again. It's this Sunday, yeah?
So if you're interested in marshalling, 10 till 3 at the grandstand, no need to book. All experience levels are welcome. Come and be part of one of the best races in the world.
Okay. Thanks for being with us today, Dr. Allinson. Good to talk to you. And remember, Man in Line is going to be live in Ramsey on Thursday at the Queen's Pier in Ramsey. It'd be good to see you there. Apparently the weather's going to be good. Open Line is back tomorrow on Man in Line from 12 midday. And thanks to Barry Redfern producing today. WINT.